Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the very first day of August. Anno Domini 2026. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things you choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Have you paid your dues? Here comes the news. We are in the new... really lovely Jack Mindy control room here at Jazz 90.1, and it is different. And we're all attempting to get used to it, so yes. Everybody be a little patient with us.
Is anybody else getting an echo?
Yes, yeah. I am. Yeah,
everybody.
I don't know.
That's all right. As long as it works, we'll see what happens.
At least it's real time and not a fractional delay, which would be really annoying.
That would, yeah.
Let me see what the YouTube stream is doing.
Yeah. All right. While you do that, I'll read the news. You may not have noticed, but Microsoft has likely added yet another program to your Windows computer without your permission. If you do a search of your apps, you're likely to find OneDrive Photos has suddenly appeared. Again, without your knowledge or permission. Who do you think owns your computer? You? No. Yes, it's currently listed as a preview or beta, but it's still got installed without your knowledge. In the programs list, it's listed as new. This is kind of a weird choice by Microsoft, given that Windows 11 devices already come with a Photos app that integrates directly with OneDrive. The dedicated OneDrive app also offers similar functionality to view your programs like Google and Apple, where you can view your backed up images alongside other file types. When I ran it on my laptop, it had already grabbed all the pictures on my computer and sorted them by date taken. The other features include a gallery to browse your images and moments, which suggests older photos for you to look at around anniversaries or on themes, similar to memories on Apple Photos or Google Photos. Other tabs include albums and favorites to help you with organizing. You can search by faces, but only by one face, I believe, right now. This app itself is nothing you haven't got in other apps. There's nothing groundbreaking here. What makes this disturbing is that Microsoft added it to your computer without your knowledge or consent. And they've done that with other things in the past. Are you really comfortable knowing that Microsoft has the ultimate control of what you thought was your personal computer? So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is... Hey, presto, it's OneDrive Photos, and your choices are marvelous. Oh, that's nice. Well, huh. Oh, I'm not happy. So, Linux, you say? So far, we've got 27 votes, and, half of them about our Linux, you say? And, of course, you can vote in the poll. It's real easy. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And when you're done with that, you can also, if you like, give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. Let me remind you that this is a whole new setup, so we're all going to be patient with each other while we figure it all out. We've seen this before. Apple did it with iPods when they gave everybody that whole album by I forget who.
U2.
U2.
With a partially unclothed man on it.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Were his arms bare?
His chest was bare.
Oh, no.
But it was a father and son, but if you don't know U2, you didn't know that.
Oh, no. Apple's done it before. Google's done things like that, but we've seen... Amazon take books away from people for various reasons. it just goes to show that that is not, in fact, your computer. It belongs to Microsoft, and they simply allow you to use it. One of the reasons that 30 years ago I switched to Linux, it's my computer. I get to own it. So I don't know how you feel about that, but I don't particularly care for anybody suddenly throwing things on my computer that aren't from me or that I had no say or control over. So, and you can talk about that if you like. Again, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. I don't know what you're hearing out there, but I sound like I'm in the bottom of a well.
Yeah, it's like Echo used to be able to turn that off. And on this new board, I followed their instructions. And
yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine when someone calls in, but right now, how's it sound on the YouTube?
There's no echo, but it does sound like muffled.
Does it?
Yeah, but no echo.
Well, at least there's no echo, so I suppose that's something.
Let's check the air stream.
Oh, yeah. How are we doing on air? Steve is checking all those things. Like I said, it's the new Jazz 90.1 has upgraded their control room, which is where we all sit. It's very different. It's actually both roomier and smaller than it was before. There's more room for each of us, but there's less room for other people.
And the other thing, though, is like right now, because the way he switched it around, all I see is the top of your heads.
Yes. Well, that's probably
so you get a thing. You need a taller chair to look down.
I don't know. Then I could, but trying to move around and answer the phones, getting up and down on the chair would be a challenge. Oh, well, like I just before we went on air, I was telling you guys one of the other things that I just discovered is I think Amazon might have a breach of their users, of the user information. I can't, you know, testify that they have. They haven't come out and said it. But I had ordered some things on Amazon, which I've done for, what, over a decade or better. And I got the items, delivered. So I went in to make a comment because I have instructions on there to leave it at the back door so porch pirates don't grab it. So I go in there to make the comment, and this was like 2 days later from when I ordered it. All of a sudden I look at my orders, and there's somebody went in there and tried to order some light bulbs, and then they canceled that. And then they went in and ordered a $979 fish finder, which is being delivered to the Bronx. So I had to quick call and cancel the card. And the thing of it is, though, it's got to be internal because my passwords are all from EnPass. That particular password going into Amazon is 28 characters. And that's with hyphens and uppercase letters and, a good combination. It's what they call a good, solid password. So I know it's not the password. So it's got to be within internal, I'm assuming, from Amazon, that some of their information in there is being leaked.
Clearly.
So they had to shut the whole account down. Of course, they opened up a fraud case. They go, "You sure you didn't have it sent there?" I go, "You look at my record. In all the years that I have had an Amazon account, not once has anything other than my address gone to."
Yeah, in June, it's reported that an extortion group stole 8.8 terabytes of data from Amazon's One Medical network. Do you get your drugs from Amazon?
No.
Drugstore? So there may be some link between those.
Well, I've ordered some vitamins and all that stuff for the wife, you know.
Maybe
and
that was
type
it.
Of stuff. So, yeah, that could be cross-linked. But, yeah, other than that, no.
So everybody who has an Amazon account should probably be checking it regularly. We've talked before about how we should all check our bank accounts at least daily.
I do that daily.
Twice a day.
Yeah.
Now, I guess I'll be adding my Amazon account to that.
Like I say, I mean, every account that I have, whether it's banking, PayPal, Amazon, any of my debit card, they all have at least 28 or better character passwords. So because I had my Facebook account hacked. What was it? I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago, and I had to start all over again. And that's when I got into EnPass, and I said, yep, go ahead, create the passwords. And like I say, the smallest password I use as a standard within EnPass is a minimum of 28 characters or more.
Yeah, I've got mine. Unless somebody comes back and says your password's too long, which makes me crazy.
Yeah.
Mine are all at the maximum, which I think is 68 characters. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I don't have to type it. EnPass is running on my desktop. It automatically, once I get to the field, I just click on it, and it says, and EnPass says, fill it in. Yeah, yep. So I don't care. I mean, right. Matter of fact, my banking one, I believe that is close to 54 characters. Because there's no way I want anybody into that one.
Right. We've talked before about having a password manager, and that is one of the major benefits. You can make a password that is so long that it would take eons to crack, but you can paste it in with a click. So, there's no excuse not to make really, 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 really long passwords.
Once you set it up, that's the thing, though. You got to get in the habit of going in there and doing it. And, matter of fact, that was one of the other things that the update with Microsoft did. They now added their security, and they want you to put in, for a lot of the logins, their Windows security system, they want you to put in PIN numbers and all that. It's like they want to take control of it.
Of course.
And it's like, yeah, no, I don't trust you folks as far as I could throw you.
That's why I don't use Windows anymore.
Uh-oh.
I do have that one system with Windows on it. And the reason for that is so that I can do screenshots when I'm doing the Ask Nick newsletter.
Yep.
That's it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you right now, the day they make it impossible for me to log in without too much information is the day I stop using that machine.
Yeah. Start looking elsewhere.
Yep. So, look, keeping yourself secure is hard. I really, truly do understand that, but you need to do that, and you need to keep your passwords in a place. And I'm gonna say something now. My wife just passed away last week, and finding all her passwords, and I was on her all the time to use EnPass, and she didn't. And finding all her passwords and getting into all her accounts and doing all of that stuff has been a friggin' nightmare. And in the middle of it all, my daughter sat me down and said, Dad, what are we going to do about your passwords? I showed her EnPass. She cried. I just said, here's every password I have ever had in my entire life, and I keep them all up to date.
I have to reflect back on a story. I remember your lovely wife there and you going round and round about going on the internet and creating a list of all her coffee types.
Yes.
And she fought you tooth and nail.
Oh, she did.
And we kept having to laugh. Oh, you were trying to make her life easier.
She fought me tooth and nail, and then she used it.
Yeah. That was the hilarious part.
How many people
then she goes, I remember you saying that, well, she was criticizing you for not having you do it earlier.
Yes.
It's like, hello, you were talking to
her. Said, you have a list of your coffee so I know what I can buy?
Yes, that's exactly right. So, and that's still up at thebeanqueen.com, but it'll be a few weeks before the stand comes back. For those of you who head out to the market on Saturdays, that my wife has for 35 or 6 years done the Rochester Public Market, and she has
moved around the studio.
Dave, pot your mic.
That's on the other side.
Oh, for Pete's sake,
Maurice.
Okay,
they call me Maurice. What's that song?
Oh, Marie.
Marie, okay.
These phones, we've got a whole new phone system.
Oh, this is going to be a joy. This is going to be very exciting. All right, so look, we're in the middle of our first week with the new phone system, with the new control room set up. So it truly is designed for DJs. We're not DJs.
Yeah. DJ might answer the phone for a song request, but it's not live on the air.
Right.
Then I just got to go over to that side and push the buttons, and they got to go back over to this side and push another button.
Right, and then at some point he's either going to have to hand me a piece of paper or type a name in. He's
typing the name in, it looks like.
Right. So, yeah, Davis.
Then he's got to go back and push another button.
Right. Dave is a biblical typer.
If we had a little bit of a longer phone cord, that would help.
That would help. But Dave is a biblical typer. His left hand knoweth not what his right hand is doing.
That's no lie. Right now with this arthritis, I don't know if the folks can see, but I've got to go for an MRI on this finger. They go, what'd you do to it? How'd you mess it up? I go, I have no clue. But it looks like somebody took a sledgehammer and smashed it. Oh, well. All right, go ahead.
All right, our first caller is Marie from North Gates, New York. What's up, Marie?
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, can you hear us?
Okay, yeah, on the radio, you sound fine. You were saying it sounded different anyway. It sounds perfectly fine at my house.
Oh, good,
thank
you.
So I just wanted you to know that. But I can't, are you saying something? Because I can't hear you if you are.
Sorry, I said that's good, thank you for telling us.
Oh, okay, yeah, you sound very faint, so I don't know what that's all about.
It's but like the only, his mic isn't
this is
on.
Really quick. The only other reason I called is, so Nick, you said your wife passed away last week?
Yeah, she did. Sunday.
I am so sorry. I mean, it was kind of like a shock. Like, I listen to you guys regularly, and, you know, I'm just used to you rambling on and answering questions, and all of a sudden you said that. I am so sorry to hear that. I really, really, very extend my sympathies to you.
Thank you so much. My daughter and I are coping. Some days better than others, but we are coping. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. So I just wanted you to know that because, you know, you guys are like friends. You know, I listen to you almost every week. So
I appreciate that. Thank you.
It's definitely not an easy thing to go to, but, you know.
Dave went through it as well.
I've been through it also. And it's the three of us. Like I say, we have been doing this for over 36 years. So we're a family here, and we support each other. And, you know, that's all you can do, and that's the way life goes. But, you know, I know countless people out there are praying for Nick and his family and what they're going through.
Well, take care. I'll be thinking of you.
Thank you, Marie. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, and I'll talk to you another time when I have some questions.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, you're welcome. Have a good day. Bye.
Thanks, you too. Bye. All right, so let's not have a lot of those kind of calls, please.
Yeah.
I'm not ready for those.
No.
I appreciate all the sentiments, but I'm not ready.
I'll further screen it a little more.
Yeah. No. Well, no, that was fine. That was fine, but I'm just not ready for more.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Keep it to computer questions.
Yeah, let's keep it to computer questions. People complain about Microsoft all the time. They don't like this. They don't like that. This change. Nobody likes change first. And the simple fact that they have put a new program on your computer without your consent, it doesn't matter that it's a nice program.
Was it in the pop-up on here's the new features of this update, little tiny line at the bottom?
No, it just snuck in. I actually read about it somewhere else, and so I went looking for it.
And there it is.
And there it is. And it's like basically
Chrome sneaking a 5 gigabyte local LLM into your computer without telling you.
It's exactly the same thing. So, like I said before, I get it. Microsoft needs to keep you on Windows. And one way they do that is making sure that they've given you all the same features that everybody else had. And so this Photos program, OneDrive Photos, is designed, A, to make you not go to Google Photos or Apple Photos or any of the others, and B, lock you into OneDrive.
And then need to start paying for storage space
and
to
start
put all your photos on it.
And look, like I said, I absolutely get that. I do. The problem is when they force it on you by not giving you a choice, and then clearly they're ashamed of it because they didn't even tell you they'd done it. That just makes me a little crazy. I'm sorry. It just does. And I'm delighted to say nothing like that has ever actually happened on my Linux boxes. I mean, you get a lot of choices for programs, a lot, but they don't install themselves. In fact, when you on many Linuxes, when you first go to install it, it says, you know, what do you want? Do you want a desktop? Do you want a desktop? Do you want a server? Do you want some sort of raw back-end machine? And then, for example, if I say desktop, then it says, okay, now we'll load you up with an office suite and a browser and, you know, all of that stuff. But you make that choice when you install the machine so that it's not just foisted upon you willy-nilly by somebody else. Yeah, I don't know. I don't quite know what to tell you about what Microsoft has done or plans to do in the future. I mean, if they can do that once. We saw the thing with the LG monitors last week, right? We weren't on the air last week. Last week, LG, if you plugged one of their new monitors into a Windows computer, it downloaded a quote-unquote driver, which was actually a pop-up ad for McAfee. A pop-up ad for McAfee. Because you bought a new monitor. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites in the brand new Jack Mindy control room here at Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a couple of minutes. Don't go too far away. There's a whole lot more of this stuff coming.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. I beg your pardon. It's been a week. Security researchers demonstrated that Claude Cowork could escape the sandbox intended to control the access it gets on your Mac. The exploit, dubbed ShareRoot, could allow an attacker to read and write files stored anywhere on your Mac, as well as access login credentials for online services. Around 500,000 Mac users had co-work sessions exposed, and some still remain vulnerable to the exploit today. Apple has released iOS, iPadOS, macOS, watchOS, and tvOS 26.6. Apart from potential security hotfixes, these are likely the last updates before the arrival of iOS 27, macOS, and so on. All of the releases include minor bug fixes, and there are numerous security updates, more than 150 for macOS 26.6. Apple also rolled out macOS 14.8.8 and macOS 15.7.8 for older devices, also focused on security fixes. In terms of new features, you won't find many in these releases as they mainly pave the way for the next major OS update, likely to hit sometime in September. Most notably, the release notes for iOS and iPadOS 26.6 say the update optimizes the Spotlight index to prepare for iOS 27. This update will kick off some indexing work, so if you're on a slower Mac, you might notice it for a day or so. Apple is being sued by three people who claim Apple is being sued by three people who claim approximately $1.8 million in Bitcoin was stolen after downloading and using a fraudulent Sparrow wallet application from the App Store. The complaint, filed on July 24th in California, alleges that Apple failed to adequately review and monitor applications distributed through the App Store while promoting the marketplace as a safe and trusted source for software. The victims allegedly had their Bitcoin transferred to cryptocurrency wallets controlled by the scammers. The legitimate Sparrow wallet is a desktop application available for Windows, Mac OS, and Linux, and does not offer an iOS version. However, Sparrow Wallet's developer says that scammers have repeatedly published applications to Apple's App Store that impersonate the cryptocurrency wallet. And Apple users are a little porked off because theoretically Apple is supposed to vet all these things. Apple customers in the U.S. will soon be able to lease an iPhone for up to 2 years at a price starting at $18 a month. The program, called Upgrade, brilliant, is in partnership with Klarna, a provider of buy now, pay later loans that will be offered to Apple's physical retail stores as well as its online store. After passing a soft credit check, customers will be offered a 1 or 2 year lease on an iPhone. There will be a similar option for an Apple Watch or a 2 or 3 year lease available for Macs and iPads. This is not new, of course. Many people are essentially leasing to buy their phones through their cellular plans, but Apple doesn't get that money. So that's why they're doing this. Vibes around Meta's AI glasses are off lately, so much so that one of the top three paid iPhone apps is dedicated to detecting when someone nearby may be using smart glasses. The app name is far from subtle, Anti-Zuck Smart Glasses Scanner. It claims to detect and alert you when Meta AI glasses are being worn around you. It apparently works like the Android app Nearby Glasses. Camera-equipped smart glasses are still fairly recognizable at this point, too, so you probably don't need an app to notice when someone is wearing them, but those new Ray-Bans that are supposed to come out soon are much more subtle. Still, the sentiment is clear. Cook, said Apple is still developing its plan to address the higher computing costs that will come with improved voice assistant. He hinted Thursday that heavy users of its revamped Siri may have to pay for access, because Apple doesn't make enough money. But we're still free, so give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, or toll free at 800-790-0415. Leasing, look, leasing and all the other ways of taking the money month by month from people, subscriptions and all of that, are the new way people are making money on the internet. And to be honest, businesses love it, because what that means is they know exactly how much they're going to pay every month for everything. If I have to pay a yearly subscription and amortize that every month, that's hard, and the price is going to change, and it's going to be a big change, and it's blah, 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 blah. If it's a monthly fee, I know how much I have to pay every single month for all of my things, and that's a different story. And people businesses rather prefer that. So and, I do understand that.
And for most people, you look at the difference between, say, the iPhone 17 at $18 a month and the 17 Pro at $23 a month. Oh, get the Pro.
Right.
And then the Pro Max is $29. Oh, get the, I'm just making these numbers up off my head. I don't know what that is.
Right.
But the difference between the payments for the next model higher is often insignificant. And so
comparatively, yes,
comparatively,
absolutely.
Yeah. So people pay $5 a month more or $10 a month
more. I could stretch that.
To get the next model better.
Right. And like I said, right now you can already do that through just about every phone company.
Yep.
All the major phone companies. And yes, that works, and it's essentially the same deal. You know, when Verizon gives you a free quote unquote phone, it isn't free. What it is you pay monthly for that phone.
Most of the time you pay upright the $1,000 for the phone,
right.
And then they give you a $100 a month credit.
So at the end
of your contract, it turns out to be free.
Right.
But yeah. And Apple already does this with the Apple credit card, 0% financing over 2 or 3 years.
Right.
So this allows people without an Apple credit card to do it.
Right. And it is, and like I said, the main reason is if you get your phone through Verizon, Apple doesn't get that money. And that does not make them happy.
Yep.
So, you know, God forbid that Apple doesn't get your money.
One of the funny things is if you go in the Apple store to buy a phone, you can buy it unlocked at a certain price. But if you want to buy it to a carrier, it costs more.
What?
Because the carrier has to activate it. And so the carrier passes that charge and Apple passes it on to you.
Wonderful.
It's those activation charges that you never notice. In the fine print when you add a new phone to a contract.
Wonderful. Well, and that's, you know, it's those hidden fees, those extra fees. You know, whenever I see a price for something, my first question is, show me the fees. When I see one of those $100 off, I think, okay, this thing costs $1,000 immediately. Because the most you're going to get is 10% off. So yeah, yes, I those things don't impress me anymore.
I saw an ad for something, and it said 60% off or $2,000 cash back, and I'm thinking, okay, that's a $10,000 thing.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's exactly right.
Yep.
And you know, you don't even have to be all that good at math to do it. You're just going to keep removing those around for the first 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah.
All the people on the YouTube channel are watching.
You're turned and looking straight at me, so it's also getting the side of your face.
That's all right. It's my best side.
Yeah.
If I can well, I'm sitting mounted on my best side. But
hey, yeah, maybe I can get it mounted to the microphone.
Oh, there you go. That's an idea. Do you think that works? I apologize to the people on YouTube right now who are, that can't be good.
Look how big you are.
That absolutely can't. That can't be good.
I can fix that in software.
That's horrible. All right. I don't care one way or the other. I got to see what that looks like on the video. All right. So those of you who are watching us on YouTube are having a bit of a laugh right now. I understand that. We're playing with the, like I said, new studio, the Jack Mindy Control Room, in honor of the great Jack Mindy. Oh, yeah, that's great.
I'm going to find what button it is to shrink the video without shrinking the frame.
That's hysterical. All right, so I have been completely thrown off my game now watching this happen. I don't know what's going on now. Good thing I showered this morning.
Mm-hmm. We appreciate it.
No, you do.
At least you didn't have a big garlic dinner.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. And the Bitcoin thing, I do want to address that. Apple is being sued because they essentially let a scam thing go through their app store. And one of the reasons for the App Store, one of the reasons they charge so much for placement in the App Store is that they're supposed to vet all of that stuff. And they clearly did not in this case. So, you know, not only is there a lawsuit against them, but a lot of developers are saying, what are we paying you for? Why are we paying you this money to vet all of these apps when you're clearly not vetting them? We haven't seen the last of that. And Sparrow Wallet, for those of you who do Bitcoin, and I don't know why you do, but for those of you who do Bitcoin, Sparrow Wallet is a legitimate product on Apple iOS and Mac. Excuse me, Apple Mac OS and Linux, but it is not on iOS. And so that's where the fake one came in. So that's where that is. And the AI glasses, there's been a fairly huge backlash since a vast percentage of the videos being taken by the AI glasses are porn or without the consent of the other participants. And that's either illegal or just immoral, for certain select values of immoral. The problem is with many of the newer glasses that are coming out, it is very difficult to tell that they are AR glasses. I mean, the old ones were big and clunky and had a giant lens. It was quite obvious. The new ones are not, particularly the new ones coming out by Ray-Ban and who's the other one? Is it Warby Parker? I don't remember who the other one is, but somebody else is coming out with them as well. So with those two coming out with fairly unobtrusive smart glasses, the programs like Nearby Glass on Linux and you having fun?
Sure.
That's the important part. Nearby Glass on Linux and Anti-Zuck Smart Glasses Scanner on the Mac or on iPhone and not Linux, Android will alert you when they detect someone using smart glasses in your area. That's very similar to the programs that theoretically will also check to see if there's a scanner on the my brain has stopped working this brain week dark. On the gas pumps that theoretically will tell you whether or not there's a scanner on them.
There's some that are targeted at people who go to hotel rooms to make sure there's no hidden camera or Airbnb.
Airbnb. Yeah. So there's a lot of that, and you know, we've got those Flock cameras that are everywhere now and are tracking everybody all the time. In London, they've been doing that for a decade at least, if not much longer. But we're getting it here now, too. Land of the free. So we're finally getting that.
Oh, that's one thing I've been watching on Facebook a lot, is about these people that are going around videotaping people just as they're coming and going, but they're doing it on sidewalks. And the reaction that these people think that, you know, you can't videotape me. You don't have my permission. He's on a sidewalk.
In public.
On public property, it is legal to do.
Right. Yep. You can, and this is one thing a lot of folks have the misconception of, is they think, well, no, you need my permission. No, when you're in public, and like a lot of these folks that I've been watching are doing it right on the public sidewalk, and people are, no, get out of my face. And they carry mace.
Yeah.
And pepper spray, rather. And spray it at people because they come up and they attack them.
Yep.
And it's like, no, you don't understand. You are out in public. It doesn't matter. I can film whatever I see. That's and a lot of folks don't realize that.
Right. That's why news cameras can set up on a street corner and you know, have a one shot with the reporter doing the news, and they don't have to block out people walking behind them because they're in a public space. Yep. If they're inside, they have to get everybody's permission.
I know a guy that will walk straight up in front of the news camera and say, I revoke your permission to film my face.
Yes,
and then they have people to scrap whatever they've shot.
Or they just block him out.
Yeah.
It used to be you'd have to scrap the film because it would take 20 minutes. Now it's just block this guy.
Reset the shot.
Select that section of the edit and boop.
Yep.
In trash.
It's not effective anymore, really. We had that problem at RIT back in the very, very, very early days before, you know, that became common. And now I believe when a student signs up for almost any school, one of the things they sign is that if we photograph you or video you for something for school, you give us that right.
Yeah,
but back in the day,
signing over
not,
permission.
And we had somebody who wanted to put out a little brochure thing, and we said, you realize you have to get the permission of every single person walking through this building if you're going to take their pictures. What? Yes, that's the law. And that was umpteen years ago, and I don't even know if the law is the same anymore. But I do know that was the way it was back then. There's a whole set of people who out there who are ready to sue and will likely win. So if you're on a public sidewalk, you have no right to the expectation of privacy, I believe. I'm not a lawyer. I don't even play one on television anymore. So the language is not right, but I'm pretty sure that it's something along those lines.
Well,
but if you are in a private place, now somebody's going to call up and say, well, I take movies at my birthday party all the time. I don't care.
Yeah.
The
we're talking about out in general public.
Right. Out in public, you can take all the pictures you want. In private, the law says you have to get everybody's permission.
Mm-hmm.
That assumes somebody's going to sue. My Aunt May is not going to sue me for having her wave at my video camera at a birthday party.
Yeah. But the person at the table behind you might.
If they're not a relative, right. If out in public somewhere, right. But when you go to something like a wedding, you have a reasonable expectation that somebody's going to take your picture or a video, even if it's inadvertently.
And a lot of companies that are like shooting a commercial or something will get a model release from everyone there just in case.
Yes.
Even if they're at a public event.
Right.
In fact, some you see that at the stadiums, you know, filming in progress, you might end up on TV.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and that's because that's a law. You cannot film
like that lady and a guy were in that suite.
Oh, yeah. That two
and he was
CEOs.
Supposed to. Yeah.
And the kiss cam? Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, that was.
I saw one of those once, and they're it's an attractive couple, and they're on camera, and then you start hearing the crowd chanting, kiss, kiss, kiss. She holds up a sign. It's my brother.
No.
She's used to this happening often enough, so she has a side with her.
Well, how about that lady that got humiliated at the baseball stadium when the boy got the ball, and she comes over and says, no, that was mine. And the team went over, and she was plastered all over the web for being such a Grinch.
There was another guy at a different baseball game. A player signed a kid's hat. The kid was like 9. Signed the kid's hat, and some other guy stole it. Just walked away with it.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. They had him on camera. They found him, and they lambasted him.
Oh, good.
Yeah. And, well, they should.
Yes.
Jerk. And I only say jerk because I'm on the radio. yeah.
We're PG.
And we're PG. We try to be PG anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so yeah, the whole idea of being filmed in public, you that's allowed. So when you're out walking around with someone who is not your significant other, maybe you shouldn't hold hands.
There's Ron White, one of the blue collar comedians, just he's coming to town later this fall. He's got a bit called Drunk in Public.
Oh, yeah.
Where he was in a bar, he was drunk, and they threw him out of the bar, and he got arrested for being drunk in public. Oh, I didn't want to be drunk in public. I was drunk in the bar and perfectly happy.
Yep.
They threw me into public.
A dear friend of mine was arrested in, I think it was Butte, Montana, for swearing in a bar. He swore. They threw him in jail.
Really?
Oh, okay.
One of those old blue laws that they never took off?
Apparently.
Wow. Especially in a bar? Hello?
I know, in a bar, that's pretty much all you get is swearing.
Yeah. Especially after.
I wouldn't know, of course.
Some individuals, you know, have had too many. Well, I've been at plenty of weddings and celebrations, and people don't know how to control their consumption of liquor. And their mouth gets ahead of their brain.
Yeah.
I'll say politely.
Yeah, yeah. I'm trying to keep the mic away from the camera. I'm trying.
Well, like I say, for me right now, it's funny. I can see Steve pretty good, but because you sit a little bit lower,
yeah,
all I see is from your nose up.
It's really,
it's like the old days when we were at this the other station and we would see Rob when he was over in the other control room, or that young girl.
Joanne.
We called her headband.
Joanna.
We called her headband girl. Because that's all we saw was the top of her forehead and this big, she always wore big headbands. And that's all we ever saw.
And now the thing is, in the brand new Jack Mindy Control Center.
This board is gorgeous, though.
It's a gorgeous setup. Oh. It truly is. Like I said, there's both more and less room. There's more room for each of us, but less room for other people. So in the times we've had a third person in here, that's not possible anymore. There's no third mic, fourth mic. There's three mics. Steve, Dave, and I each have a mic. But there's no fourth mic, so that's done. But also there's less space.
Yeah.
For another person.
Well, it's kind of weird, too, that I'm switched around. I can see what's going on. Like Rob had originally said,
yeah,
I can see what's going on in the door.
The back of the door.
I've got a monitor over here, which you folks can't see. Is I can see all the cameras for outside in case somebody comes up to the door and need to let somebody.
Yeah, and they turned that off so we can't see the outside cameras now.
Right. Behind you, it used to be.
Or my camera.
Now over here on the small monitor here, along with my meter readings and everything else. But I mean, this board, I believe they posted a picture on the Jazz 90.1 website of this beautiful board. And I mean, it's great to for donations and that folks did, because that board before was in bad need of a replacement for quite a few years. So it's through your support, folks, that we finally have some decent equipment. That is really
that might have been the original board from 50 years ago.
I think so. Well, we had
clearly.
It as long as I've been running it, and we've been with this organization over 17 years now. That was the only board that I knew of, and now to have something that has digital meters and everything else, and it's not bouncing all over the place, it's beyond words. It is a gorgeous board and worth every penny of it, and hopefully we sound a lot better, too, because due to the board and the mixing and everything else of the songs throughout the week and everything else is also sounding a lot better.
Yeah. It's for those of you who are regular listeners to this station and who isn't have found that when the new board came up and the new studio was done, things sounded much nicer. They sounded good before. They sound better now.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we're getting a weird kind of instant echo or hollow sound in our headsets. But as long as it's not going out over the air, I don't care. I can live. All right. That music tells us the first hour of this show is done. But do not despair. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. A whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, a whole nother hour of the Jack Mindy Control Center, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0444. 1-5. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly, truly grateful to you that we continue to be solely member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just a couple of minutes, so don't wander too far off.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And I will read some Apple news while you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299 or toll-free at 800-790-0415.
Didn't you already do the Apple news?
What?
Didn't you already do the Apple news?
Didn't I say Apple news?
You said.
Already did the Apple news. What's wrong with you? I had it upside down. That's why. I had it upside down. I will do the Microsoft and Google news. Anthropic's new AI model, Mythos, I don't care, was given access to Windows code in a project called Project Glasswing. Turns out that Mythos was surfacing bugs faster than Microsoft could patch them, and engineers, the manager said, were now in a mad dash to close the gap. Honestly, finding bugs in Microsoft code doesn't seem like that much of a flex. On the Google side, with help from its internal AI tools, Google said it has patched more security flaws in its Chrome browser in the past month than in the past 2 years combined. It fixed a whopping 1,072 security bugs in the last two versions of Chrome, both released in June. That is more than the number of bugs patched in the previous 23 versions released over the last 2 years. A Windows 11 update is now rolling out with several quality improvements, particularly performance gains. This update is available via Windows Update installs only when you tap the Download and Install button. This is an optional update and is internally known as a D release because it rolled out the last week of the month, unless, of course, you toggle on to get latest updates as soon as they're available. Toggle. And that may well be also the one that borked a bunch of Dell machines, which they've now blocked. So I don't know. An untold number of Claude chats and artifacts, the interactive mini apps and documents users can build inside Claude, were found publicly searchable on Google over the weekend. Some reportedly contained health records, private company documents, and the names and phone numbers of children. Anthropic appears to blame the users for the exposure. So back off, citizen. Threat actors are impersonating IT support staff in Microsoft Teams calls to gain remote access to corporate devices and deploy chaos ransomware in attacks targeting North American organizations. So if you use Teams, be certain you know who you're actually talking to. You know, use something old-fashioned like a telephone. Google is exploring how to keep the desktop version of its Chrome browser always up to date without users needing to restart it to apply updates. Just like many other Chromium-based browsers, Chrome can already download updates in the background and install them at the next restart of the browser. However, when a critical vulnerability is already being exploited by attackers, Chrome users who delay the restart of the browser for whatever reason will be vulnerable without even knowing it. Also, Google Chrome will soon switch to a faster two-week release cycle, and this will start with the release of Chrome 153 in September of 2026. Microsoft will be doing the same for its Edge browser. So for those of you who have rolling release capabilities, like if, for example, you're using the Ubuntu Pro setup on Ubuntu, which is free for five machines, by the way, your machine will update in the background unless it's a major security update that does need a reboot. And so you don't even know what happened, but your machine is up to date with everything. We rarely talk about rumors or upcoming stuff because things change so quickly, and frankly, most of them are lies. But yesterday, Windows chief Pavan Davuluri has posted an article on X that includes their plan to reduce Windows memory footprint to deliver a fast and responsive Windows experience across the PCs customers use every day. That is to say, not the 64 gigabyte, 10 terabyte machines that the developers are using. The plan is to make the Windows 11 experience on an 8 gig machine acceptable. That's right. Currently, an 8 gig Windows machine is underpowered. This is likely a direct response to the global RAM shortage and the phenomenal success of the MacBook Neo. I have no idea how much RAM would make our performance accessible, but let's find out. So give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415. This is one of the reasons that so many of us are now putting Linux on those old machines. They have 4 gig of RAM. Some of them have 2 gig of RAM. Windows 11 ain't happy.
Yeah.
I'm running.
Let alone any other program you want to run on top of Windows.
Well, exactly
like your
right.
Web browser.
I do have a that little 2-in-1, that futuristic, the Fujitsu stylistic that I run. It's a little 2-in-1 tablet with a keyboard thing, and it only has 4 gig of RAM and a low end processor, and is running Windows 11. And like I said, I use it only to do screenshots for my newsletter. I don't use it for day-to-day work because it would make me even crazier than I already am. It's very slow, and it's just not useful at all, truly. 4 gig Windows 11 machine is a painful experience. I'm sure there are those of you out there who are using them and have gotten used to them. You deserve better. You deserve much, much better. So yeah, absolutely. Even on 8 gig, according to Microsoft, that's an underpowered Windows machine. I remember when 8 gig was more than enough, and for Linux, it's way more than enough. This is an 8 gig machine, and there isn't anything I can't do fast and easy on this machine. But under Linux, it's now considered underpowered.
We always used to tell people get double what the minimum says.
Yep.
If triple if you can, because minimum always lies.
Well, and back in the day, when something said 8 gig and you said, okay, I can get 16 gig, that's another $100. Who cares? Now it's another $500 and people simply can't afford it.
The official system minimum requirements for Windows 11 are a 1 gigahertz processor with at least 2 cores and 4 gigs of RAM.
That's what I'm running on my Fujitsu Stylistic. And I'm telling you, it is paleolithically slow.
But it runs.
It does run. And so Microsoft technically is correct, which...
The best kind of correct.
Exactly right. And so I do get that. But it's paleolithically slow. Of course, again, I'm used to Linux. Linux is super fast, super responsive. Multiple programs are fine. I was watching a YouTube video the other day where a guy had an old... Oh, we do have a phone call. I beg your pardon.
Yeah.
I beg your pardon.
I got to get you used to looking at the screen.
I was watching our little faces on YouTube, and it's
and
my
waiting
fault.
Waiting for the piece of paper that's not going to come.
You're right. I'm waiting for the piece of paper.
All right. What I should do is just flash the paper for
you. Flash the paper, throw something at me or spit at me, whatever it takes. All right, our next caller is Will from Hampton, VA. Hi, Will, what's up?
You know, I was just thinking, fellas, this is one of those perfect storm conversations because a couple of weeks ago, I forget whether it was a YouTube video I saw or something that I read. Apparently, there in fact is an undercount of Linux installations on personal desktops and laptops, and that's simply because of the by nature Linux tends to be very anonymous as opposed to, you know, the Windows installations out there. And this just kind of dovetails on those that conversation that you guys are having about Linux. And I just wanted to, you know, hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Will. One of the ways that people tell what operating system you're on, what browser you're on, is there are a couple of sites on the web that collect data from your browser, right? So a browser, I don't know if you know this, but your browser will tell the other side an amazing amount of information about you, including your operating system. On a lot of Linux systems, that is blocked. They don't know what operating system you're on, so they don't count it.
Or Linux is used to mimicking Windows for that purpose, so the website still comes in.
Right. And so you can fake what operating system you're on. And as Steve said, many Linux systems tell the other side they're on Windows because that side will not do certain things if it doesn't think you're on Windows, even though Linux can do those things. In fact, there are Macs that do the same thing. Yeah. There are Mac operating systems that do the same thing.
My user agent says I'm running Mozilla 5. I'm running Safari 30 or something.
Yeah. And so those are, what's the proper term? Bullpucky.
Yeah.
All of those things. And you're right, Will. Linux is vastly undercounted.
Conventional wisdom said that the installation was like somewhere around 5%, but some people think it might be actually up above 20%, especially with Windows ending support for 10.
Yep. A lot of secondary machines are now running Linux. See, is this the year of the Linux desktop?
Perhaps it is.
It's been that way for me for 30 years, but longer. But you're right, Will. The counts are, look, somebody very smart once said, the minute you can count something, the minute you can make something a metric, it becomes the metric you work toward. And the minute you count something, you better make sure you're counting it accurately. And you're right. The browser that's being used, the operating system that browser is on, and a whole lot of other features of many machines are not, in fact, accurate. And so when you see all those counters, this is how many Windows machines there are and how many Linux machines there are, and Macs and yada, yada.
Yep.
You can't tell. Now, we do know some things. Like, for example, in its heyday, we knew because Google told us that there were 900,000 Android activations every day.
Yeah. All the companies used to say what their sales numbers were, and they've all stopped.
And they've all stopped now because there aren't 900,000 new machines sold every day any longer. So, yeah, and I get that.
I don't think we can know for sure just how many Android installations there are out there.
That's right. I absolutely agree. There's no way we can tell at this point how many of any machine there is. And the only way you could do that would be to create a virus that went into every machine, figured out its operating system, and then sent that back to somebody. That is illegal.
There are some companies, I'm looking at one now called StatCounter, that will pay you a little bit to put a tracker on your webpage so that you can track all your visitors and report this type of stuff back to them, and they can put it all together. And so they currently give Windows a 71%, OS X a 12%, Mac OS 7%, so people who haven't upgraded, Linux at 7%, Chrome at 1%.
Again, though, StatCounter relies on self-reporting. That's not necessarily accurate at all. It is accurate of the people who install the thing.
Yep.
And that's all you can say about it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right, Will. We don't know.
Yeah, that's my two cents on the matter.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you, Will.
You're welcome, sir.
All right,
enjoy
have
the rest
fun.
Of the afternoon now.
You too.
And all then right. realize that the underlying base of Mac is Unix.
Right.
Every web server, mail server, most of that stuff serving the internet is Unix.
Somebody, there was a great interview with Linus Torvalds, the guy who created Linux. And he said...
From Unix.
But from Unix, yes. Yep. And he admits that. Actually from Minix.
Yeah.
But still, all the same. And somebody asked him essentially that question, when is Linux going to take over the desktop? And he said that this frustrates me terribly. He said, I wrote Linux as a desktop operating system. It runs the internet. It runs servers. It runs phones. And it doesn't run the desktop.
Everything but what you thought it was going to be.
Exactly. But, you know, people say, well, I don't use Linux. Yeah. Yes, you do. Every single day. If you have an Android phone, you're using Linux. If you use a Mac, you're using a Linux-like operating system. If you go to a website, you're using Linux. If you have a router, you're using Linux.
Even Windows is putting Linux underneath there, too.
There's Linux, the Linux subsystem for Windows, LSW, Windows subsystem, WLW, I don't care. If you have a NAS in your house, it's running Linux. If you run a Raspberry Pi, it's running Linux. I mean, just there's so many Linux machines out there. And, of course, that's the other thing, right? My Raspberry Pis, I run four of them. How many do you run, Dave?
A lot.
I didn't mean to make you think. I apologize. Well, no, five. He runs five. So that's nine machines that are not reported because they don't go out to the internet themselves.
Well, that's just.
You want to turn your mic on?
Thank you. Yeah, I've got five inside that I use personally.
Right.
And then for my ham operation stuff, I've got three more.
Right. But so the point is, the five that you're using in the house are servers.
Right.
They don't report themselves to the internet because they don't themselves actually go out to the internet.
No.
So
no
there could
way.
Be a whole lot more Linux machines out on the internet than Definitely. We think there are. So, you know, I take all those counter stat things with a very, very large, or is it very, very small grain of salt. I just don't, that doesn't mean a thing to me. I believe there's a whole lot more Linux out there than we think, particularly if you, depending on where you go, because StatCounter doesn't hit every system on the internet. It doesn't hit every computer that goes to the internet, and it also doesn't hit every site on the internet. So let's say your daily driver for work is a Windows machine. Then you come home and you use Linux, and you use Linux on sites that aren't checked by StatCounter. That doesn't know you have a Linux machine.
Yep.
Or you use it as your second machine because you're learning it. You probably don't go out to the internet a lot with it, except like for mail or for playing around once in a while. So it doesn't even know you have it. So that stuff doesn't make sense to me. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Canandaigua, New York. What's up, Tom?
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, I'm trying to find a good way to buy things over the internet. Last Sunday, I had to lock my credit and debit card because I got hacked.
Yeah.
One of the cards that got hacked last Sunday was a new card because I got hacked 2 weeks ago. I just activated it Thursday, and it got hacked Sunday. I'm at a loss. I don't think there's a lot of security on the internet. And, you know, I don't drive anymore. I got to use Instacart for food, but they seem to be the place that every time I put something on there, it gets stolen.
Well, credit card numbers are created mathematically, and that formula is known. So it's easy for bad guys to generate a credit card number and try to charge against it. And if it doesn't work, generate a new one and try again, and generate a new one and try again. So it may not have been anybody hacking you. directly. It could have just been they picked your credit card number in their list.
Yes, but often what happens is it doesn't matter how secure you keep your stuff because they steal it directly from the bank.
From the other end.
So one of the things you can do, and I know this is a pain in the patoot, believe me, I've done it, is you set up a second account with a separate credit card and only put a little bit of money in it.
Yeah, a limit, $500 or $200
right, put
minimum.
Put a very small limit on that credit card. So if I order, for example, I order a pizza, that's going to cost me $20, $30, whatever that's going to cost me, under the limit. If I want to buy a television, now I'm either doing a lot of shopping or I'm using a different card, or now I go out to the store. So for the daily driver stuff, that Instacart thing, you open up a second bank account, put a very low limit on the amount of the credit card or debit card, and then move money back and forth. You know, I'm going to buy groceries this week. It's going to cost me $100. I'll throw $100 in.
There's also many banks and credit cards, and there's a company called Privacy.com that you can get a single-use credit card.
A virtual credit card
on your existing account. It can only be used once. Or you can get a merchant-locked credit card, so it only works at Instagram. Or there's a category-locked card. It only works for food. So if someone tries to buy a fish finder, they can't. And so check with your bank and your credit card issuer, and I'm putting up a link for privacy.com for those types of cards that can help. It only works at that one place, and so even if the number does get stolen, it doesn't work anywhere else.
So it's doable, but it's a pain in the patoot to get set up.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Well, that's a good idea. A second account and just put in when I need it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like I say,
Thank you guys very much. Food's back on the menu.
Thank you, Tom. Good for you.
So, Tom, one thing you got to insist on is when you set up this other card, quite often, you know, say you tell them, all right, I only want a $500 or $300 limit. Quite often, after a while, they'll say, hey, we're going to raise it. And I had this happen a couple of times when I was getting other stuff and, you know, we had been hacked. I said, you raise it. And I'm canceling the card because they'll try to bump you up to you so you'll spend
more. Yeah, you
do
have to pay attention. You do have to work at
monitor it frequently.
Yeah. You'll get those things in the mail.
I'll just open another savings account at the credit union, and I'll just use that exclusively for that debit card.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I only put in right before I place an order how much the order is going
to
be.
Yeah,
that's
even
the
if
way
you,
to do it.
Yeah, if you only, you know, on an average, say you keep $100 in it just to keep it active, not get any finance charges or anything else. And then once you order something, then you put that amount back, replenish it with that amount.
Take a look at what overdraft protection they have.
Right.
So if the bad guy does try to charge something, you don't want it to go and pay an overdraft fee.
My suggestion is to actually talk to your bank. Give them what you've talked about here and say, what I want is an account that has no overdraft on it and that I can easily move money into when I need to and comes with a debit card.
Those are some great ideas, guys. I'll get working on that this week.
All right.
There you go.
Well done, Tom. Thanks.
Let us know how you make out.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, guys. Love your show.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes, I have had my credit card stolen. The thing that makes me angry is I actually knew the old credit card number, and I could rattle it off. Now I can't learn the new one. My brain says it's going to be stolen anyway, so don't bother.
Well, one of the things that might help is Google Pay or Apple Pay. Because then the real credit card number is never given to the merchant.
Right.
So if the merchant gets hacked or the POS terminal gets hacked, they don't get your real credit card number and can't charge against it.
That's right. Love the tap to pay.
Right. Yeah. That's what he's talking about is tap to pay. I use my watch constantly, In fact, I'm known in a couple places as the watch guy. Apparently, I'm the only person in North America. I use my watch all the time, or I use my phone, tap to pay. It's easy to set up. As Steve said, it's a one-time number. So they cannot use, if that number gets stolen, it doesn't matter to me. It cannot be used.
And proof of that is I got my wife finally set up to use the wallet and that on her phone. Since then, she has not been hacked. Before, when she was using her card, she got hacked twice. Last year at Memorial Day, we wound up going through the whole Memorial weekend. Somebody had her card and was going out and buying, movie tickets and having dinners, and they had their nails done and all that, and we had to fight to get that all back. So since I got her just doing tap to pay, no more.
Yep. It took me a long time to get Elaine to do tap to pay, too, but once I did, she was, this is so easy.
Yeah.
And you're telling me it's more secure? Yes, it's easier and more secure. Win, win. Yep. So, yeah, definitely check that out. All right. Everybody get up. I don't want to get up. Well, I probably will get up because we're about to take a break. We are going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. But only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. You're listening to Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
I can't help myself. I got a new toy. I got to play with it.
You got to play with the toy. Okay. Oh, this is good. Johnny Ive, who, traitor, disappeared from Apple and now works with Sam Altman, have been teasing an AI hardware device for a long time, and it's increasingly looking like that tease was premature. We're still not expecting to see a launch until some point next year. OpenAI continues to be exceedingly vague about what form the first hardware device might take, but an interview Wednesday seems to point to something rather like a HomePad. So, ho-hum, I guess?
Maybe. Apple hasn't announced theirs yet either.
If you don't want AI scrapers training themselves on your website, I haven't tried this yet, but there's a new way to stop them that doesn't involve server-side blocking or praying they respect your instructions in robots.txt. A team of creatives have teamed up with a typography company to create a new type of font that'll trick LLM scrapers into adjusting poisoned gibberish. Named Shield Font, the open source project almost seems like magic if you're not familiar with the ins and outs of computer fonts. Look at a web page written in Shield Font, and it'll appear exactly as you would expect. It also, if you have a screen reader, it reads correctly. However, if you inspect the raw HTML that the scraper reads from a Shield-fonted page, you'll see a sentence that's essentially gibberish. And that's at shieldfont.org. I've got that on here. Despite certain improvements in accuracy, speaking of AI, large language models still hallucinate a lot. So much so, in fact, that cybersecurity researchers warn that criminals can easily weaponize delusional AI outputs to spread malware throughout the internet. The attack works by exploiting a persistent flaw in AI coding assistance. Basically, when these tools recommend third-party software packages, there's a strong possibility that they include names of ones that don't actually exist. I've seen this way more than once. Attackers can simply identify hallucinated package names that they know AI coding assistants will reference, register them as real repositories, and stuff malware inside. Samsung's latest update was supposed to improve the overall experience for Galaxy S25 Ultra and Galaxy S24 Ultra users. However, it seems the update has done the opposite for some people. Over the past few days, a growing number of users have reported major battery drain after installing the latest July security patch. There's no workaround. There's no fix. Just charge more often. Governments around the world are suddenly very keen on online verification requirements. In some places, this takes the form of ID requirements to access adult content, but several U.S. states have also focused on app stores. With these laws now going into effect, Google has announced an expansion of its beta Play Age Signals API, which it claims will allow developers to confirm user ages without impinging on privacy. This is actually pretty clever. Google's system doesn't require an ID or selfie verification. It's connected to the company's existing Family Link app. The idea is that parents set an age range for their kids' managed accounts. For example, you might set an age range like 16 to 17, allowing apps to tailor experiences and content for teenagers. LG got caught showing, we already talked about this, showing ads for McAfee to people who dared to plug in a monitor. An investigation by Gamers Nexus revealed that plugging in certain LG monitors triggers a Windows update to automatically download the LG monitor app installer without user consent. This isn't just a display driver. It was a utility app that displayed pop-up ads for McAfee. The uproar required Microsoft to step in. Actually, Microsoft stepped in. They don't even step in for their own stuff. And pressured LG to stop putting adware on people's computers. Still think you own your own Microsoft computer? If LG can install programs without your consent, who else could? Not us. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 800-790-0415.
I read a story about a professor at Brown that was so annoyed about his students using AIs like ChatGPT to write papers and whatnot, that he hid an embedded AI command in the instructions for students to write the paper. And 57 out of 60 students turned in a paper with this hidden instruction in it, showing they didn't even proofread their own paper.
Right.
And the other three used it, but probably proofread it.
Right. I cannot imagine using, well, I'm proud of my knowledge. I'm proud of my writing skills. So I cannot imagine using AI to write my stuff. There's on the other hand, that's a little hypocritical because in college I wrote papers for other people. Yeah. And I fully admit that. But they paid me.
Yep.
I was a poor college student.
There's a meme going around about today's students are saying, how could I possibly write a 10-page paper without AI? And you know, 60-year-old person said, dude, I wrote a 10-page paper without even reading a book.
Exactly right.
If I was lucky, I'd read the
Cliff Notes.
I'd usually just read the summary on the back page.
Yes. I fully admit, because it's long gone now, I was once given a test where one of the questions I simply had no idea. I took half a page and reworded the question for half a page, and I got full credit for it. I don't know why.
They looked at the length of the answer, not the content of the answer.
It's clearly true. But
like that scene in the movie where the guy weighs the paper and that feels like a B. Give it back to NASA. I'm making A out of it.
It used to be many decades ago, you could have the Encyclopedia Britannica people write a paper for you. And I actually did this once on the moon. I had them write a paper.
How did they get to the moon?
Boom! Thank you.
Boy, he'll
be here all week.
Tired.
Try the veal. It was a thing. We owned the Encyclopedia Britannica. God bless my parents. They scrimped and saved to get me the insight, which I read cover to cover, by the way. You could, if you were a subscriber, you could have them write two papers a year, as I recall, and you would send them what was the subject was, what grade you were in, how old you were, and they tailored a paper to your writing age. I got it back. I read it. I realized I could do no better than they, so I turned it in. I admit that. But I don't use AI today because, in fact, AI does not write better than I do. And maybe that's egotistical. I don't care. The reality is that much of AI is not smart and lies. Excuse me, hallucinates.
But people don't know how to research their own topic, so they don't know it's wrong.
Right. But what came from AI, it must be right. No, likely it's not, quite frankly. Likely it's not. You know, okay, so the other thing is there's two kinds of AI, right? There's generative AI and there's predictive AI. Generative AI takes stuff that's already been done and regurgitates it. That's fairly accurate. So when you're, for example, doing coding and you ask a AI to write some code for you, that's generative. It goes and finds stuff that's already been done and steals it. If you're asking it to write something new, that's predictive, and it panics and makes stuff up.
Because it doesn't want to say no.
Because it doesn't want to say I don't know. And so...
Just like people.
I never say I don't know because I would rather bowl my way through and say I don't. That's not true. I will say I don't know all the time.
Let me check on something and get back to you.
Well, I will say I don't know, but I will find out. That's exactly right. When you are using AI, understand whether you're using predictive or generative AI. And generative AI is generally okay, generally. Predictive is not. But again, generative AI makes mistakes as well. As we said, as we saw in that news item, AI will often make up library names that simply do not exist.
But would be really cool if it did.
but it would be cool if it did. And so when you try to find it, you can't. Except now the bad guys are saying, oh, it always suggests this. So I'll create a library called that, put it in GitHub, and fill it with malware.
Yep.
Then I'll download it thinking, oh, look, I found the thing that AI said I should use. And there you are. Now you're caught. I would be very, very careful personally about using AI for any of that stuff. I would, you know, it's very hard to vet a library, but why would you use something that you don't know what's in it? Have a little more self-respect, for Pete's sake. That's where that stands. I don't know. I use AI for little things, like why isn't this piece of code working? Which, again, that's generative AI, and it's not looking for a new library. It's saying things like, well, you idiot, you put this outside the loop. Oh, okay, right. Of course I did. Fix that. You know, sometimes when you've been looking at code for 6 or 7 hours, you just don't see things. And this AI scraping business, everybody's suing everybody right now because every AI company is stealing other people's work, whether it's text or graphics. And I understand the problem that people are having, and I understand that it's not good. I may end up doing that on the Ask Nick newsletters. That would be interesting.
Hmm.
I don't know that works. In an email.
There's also a big problem with some of the AI companies are buying books, scanning them, and then physically destroying the book.
Well, they have to destroy it to scan it. They cut the pages off.
And they're doing it for old rare books.
Yeah.
And so all the book lovers are just, oh my. No.
Can't they photocopy them first?
Nope.
Well, do you ever try to photocopy, especially a thick book, the distortion? So they need someone to write code so they can smooth out that distortion among the spine.
Or they need to make a
scanner.
Scanner with two
things. Well, they have it. Yeah. They have it for the people that are blind. or need reading assistance. They've got a viewer that they can put a book under.
The problem with that is it's manual.
You got to turn the pages manually.
But but destroying a valuable book?
They don't care. It's faster to destroy it than it is to do it manually. That's all they care about.
Dang.
Yeah, that's all they care
about.
That's sad. Yep. So, I do want to go back to that LG monitor thing. That truly disturbs me. I don't use Windows, so I don't care in that sense. I mean, personally. But the fact that you plug in a monitor and it loads something onto your machine. I get it when it loads a driver, but it didn't ask. Well, and it asked to load the driver, but it says it's a driver. So you're going to say, yes, I want the best driver for this monitor.
It's driving something.
What?
It's driving something. It's driving money into their pockets.
That's exactly right. They didn't say what kind of driver. Shut up. And so what it did was it downloaded, yes, it did download a driver, but it also, part of that driver was to pop up an ad every once in a while for McAfee antivirus. That's intrusive.
Was it the real McAfee?
No, it was the real McAfee.
That's a big common malware now. It's fake McAfee and Norton because those are the names people know.
Right. Well, but that's my next point, which is how do you know that the next one you get is real?
Yeah.
How did you know that one was real? Well, we know it was real because McAfee and LG copped to it. Okay. But beyond that, who knew? Right?
It was in the terms and conditions on the side of the box. It said you agree to do marketing partners.
Right. And nobody reads that stuff. Nobody reads the TNC anymore. Nobody ever reads the TNC. What do I mean anymore? Nobody ever reads the TNC terms and conditions. And so we do that all the time, right? We click through. It's next. I've always said that the difference between the average user and the guru is the guru reads the manual. There aren't any manuals on the more. Nowadays, the guru reads the TNC and maybe even understands a little bit of it. So you need to be aware that there's a they can slip things by you. First thing let's do, let's kill all the lawyers. That's Shakespeare, by the way. Don't blame me. Even back then. I'll be playing with Shiofan at one of these days. I'm going to be playing with that.
What do you call a hole half filled with lawyers? A hole half filled with lawyers?
I don't know.
Sorry? Not enough lawyers.
Yeah.
Until you need a lawyer, you don't like lawyers.
That's right. I have a good friend who's a lawyer, and he knows more lawyers jokes than anybody, which is kind of funny. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bruce from Henrietta, New York. Hiya, Bruce. What's up?
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, can you hear us?
Sam, can you hear me okay?
Yes, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, what's up?
I'm calling about the fellow with the credit card issues. And I'm not sure how the Google card works, but I have an Apple card. And I use everything I purchase, well, the majority of items, goes through PayPal. So I don't ever give out my card to everybody, just one place. And I find it easier than having to give everybody a security number or whatever. So might be good advice for the Google card if you need to, or to get an Apple card or something like that.
That's a good point, Bruce. For those of you who have PayPal and have money in PayPal, you can get a PayPal card or just go right to your PayPal account, and both Apple and Google in their wallets, I think they're both called, will let you use either a credit card or your PayPal number. And so you can pay with PayPal. And PayPal has other protections installed. So it's another good way to make sure that your money is safe. Good point. Thank you.
You're welcome. Take care. Have a good day.
All right. Have fun. Yeah. The two places that we tend to spend money these days are small items locally, like groceries and going out to eat and stuff like that, and online where we purchase a lot of things. And like Tom and like me these days, I prefer to have things delivered to my house. I do not walk well anymore. I'm severely arthritic, and so it is. There are days when I want to get out, and there are days when I do not.
Mm-hmm.
And on those days when I do not, if that's a shopping day, I have stuff delivered, and I'm not ashamed to admit it. But that means I'm giving my number over the internet. I buy things from Amazon all the time. I buy things from other places all the time. And so...
You're giving a job to somebody else.
What?
You're giving a job to somebody else.
And I'm providing a job in the economy. I'm keeping the engine of commerce running. You're welcome, America. But what that means is that my credit card number gets out there. So I do tend to pay with PayPal a lot because there are additional protections on PayPal. I do tend to pay with my Google card a lot because of the same reason. Yesterday I took my daughter out to lunch, which was insanely delightful, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady came to the table with a little card reader. Most places aren't doing that yet.
Well,
I paid with my watch.
Some places did that for a while. They left the card reader on the table where they got destroyed.
Yeah.
Because there's games that you can play on
it. Kids were playing with them.
But they would break them. And so now if you ask for one, they might bring it to you.
Right. So, she handed me one and I tried to use it with my watch and it wouldn't take. And I said, oh, there's something wrong with my watch. And she said, no, it's this reader. So she traded with somebody else. And that one worked fine. So now there's a waitress out there who knows who I am and where I ate lunch yesterday. Yep. so there are ways to protect your credit card number on the internet. It does mean a little bit of setup ahead of time, like, as we said with Bruce and Tom, creating a second account with a minimum amount of money in it and a debit card. That does take a little time to set up, but once it's set up, you're done.
Yeah.
You know, and then, like Dave said, put $100 in it. That's the most you could, or $50, whatever number you want. And then you go and buy some groceries, then you put that money back, top it back up to $100.
You know how much you spent, and if you're like me, say I've spent $65.74. I'll put $70 back into it.
Right.
Yeah. You always will have enough in there, but not an amount that somebody could go wild, and do shopping sprees and buy the fur coats.
We always used to tell people that about their iTunes account. Don't tie it to a credit card. If you're buying music or your kids are buying things for their games, get a $50 iTunes card, put that on there, and then it stops at $50.
Well, now no one is streaming. Yes. And we've seen that before where, you know, some parent finds their kid spent $1,500 on credits in a game. Well,
Smurfberries or,
right.
or Candy Crush.
So that's how do you prevent that? Well, like we just said. So, yeah. Be aware that there are a lot of ways that you can lose your credit card information. But there are also a lot of ways that you can protect it. So be careful. Take some time to set it up. And yes, it can be a little painful to set up. But once it's set up, it's done. And it's a lot more painful to have to replace a credit card.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more painful. And you may never get that money back. So be aware and be careful. There's just a lot you can do to protect yourself.
I was at Wegmans last night. And in my digital wallet, switching between the Wegmans card for them to scan and then my credit card for them to scan. This is supposed to be easy, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, so be aware. Get yourself set up ahead of time and you're done. That's all there is to it, and you're done. It makes sense to me. I don't talk to your bank. You know, we tend to do everything online nowadays, and that makes a lot of things easier. But for something like this, feel free to head into your bank, talk to an actual human being, which you can still do. Do it while it's still available, and get yourself set up with something like that. Explain to them your problem. Get them to set you up, and you're done. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. Our first time in the Jack Mindy control room is now in the history books, as is this episode of Sound Bites. We want to thank everybody who called in. We want to thank all those of you who listened. We want to thank all those of you who are patient with us. We will see you tomorrow night in the Sound Bites Lounge at 9 p.m. You can join us. Check the Sound Bites webpage for that. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. For Dave Enright and Steve Ray, I'm Nick Francesco, and we are Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Hug your loved ones hard and be good to one another, will you?